Okay, so good morning, Professor Southern. Thank you very much for joining us. As we discussed ahead of this interview, we'll be covering the period of your career where you overlapped with the spinning glass and the replica symmetry breaking ideas, from which we bound roughly from 1975 to 1995. But before we get to that, we had just a few background questions we wanted to ask you so that we can help better situate the work you did in that period. So first, do you mind telling us a bit about your family and what led you, and what were your studies like before you started university?
Well, before I went to university, I was obviously in Ontario high school system, which went to grade 13. And from there, I went to York University, which was a brand new university in Toronto, for 4 years in a interdisciplinary science program, which allowed you to sample biology, chemistry, physics, and then in the last 2 years you would specialize to whatever field you wanted, and I went into physics. From there I went to McMaster University, and I worked there on a master's and PhD with David Goodings, who was working in the area of magnetism, mainly spin excitations and magnetic systems, heavy rare earth systems. Following that,
what drew you to physics first and then to theoretical physics for a PhD?
Well, I like problem solving. I was fairly adept at mathematics, and I guess I didn't really like the biology. It was too much memory. So I just gravitated to the physics problem solving type of area.
Okay. And then you went on for a an NRC postdoc.
Yeah, I had
Imperial
an NRC
College.
That's right, with David Sherrington.
What drew you to Imperial College and or to David Sherrington? What was the connection there?
Well, again, he had been working on rare earth systems as well when he was in La Jolla, I think it was at the time, on spiral systems and magnetic systems, and I was interested in that. Imperial College had a very good reputation. The scholarship allowed me to go anywhere I wanted, so that's what I chose, was to go to Imperial College.
So, but did you know him ahead of time or only through his publications?
No. Only through the publications, yeah.
Okay, and you contacted him and he accepted you?
Yeah, because it didn't cost him anything.
So can you describe a bit how the Sherrington group was part of the larger Coles group, we understand, at Imperial. So can you tell us a bit how the Coles and the Sherrington groups functioned when you arrived there?
Well, I guess David was a reader at the time. He was a theorist, obviously. I think Norman March was the head of the department at that time. And Brian Coles, of course, was the head experimentalist in that group. And so there was a lot of interaction in terms of trying to understand spin glasses or random magnets at the time. I think Brian Coles, was attributed with coining the phrase originally at some conference. I can't remember where that was now. But David was interested in it. But there was also Nick Rivier was in the department, and he had an interaction with Sam Edwards. Sam Edwards would come to the department once a week or so and talk with Nick, and he talked to Nick about this replica method that he and Anderson were looking at. It was a classical spin model and trying to average the logarithm of the partition function, and led to this n going to zero limit of a replica calculation. So I talked to Nick about that quite a bit, and David did as well. And then we got a preprint, I guess, of the paper by Edwards and Anderson, and that sparked our interest even more. And so we started looking at that problem ourselves, and I guess David and I looked at adding in competition between ferromagnetism and spin glass behavior.
So before we move to that, could you tell us, when did you actually first hear about spin glasses, and how were you introduced to them as the concept?
Well, as I said, it was through Nick Rivier, talking to Nick Rivier, who had frequent conversations with Sam Edwards. and also through Brian Coles. Brian Coles' group was obviously very interested in those things, and there were a number of talks and seminars on it.
So had you met John Maidosh when he visited, for instance?
Yes, or... I had met him, yes, yes.
Okay, so this was mentioned in group meetings or in seminars or?
Seminars, there weren't so many group meetings. It was just casual conversations with me anyway. That was the main way of doing it.
Okay, so you mentioned what led you to work with David Sherrington on the competition between ferromagnetic and spin glass order. What was the reaction of Nick Rivier and the rest of the Coles group to this work when you start talking about it?
Well, I can't remember too much about the reaction. I think they were very interested in it. Obviously, the paper by Edwards and Anderson, I think, had maybe appeared by that time. And so ours was a follow-up to that. And then David Sherrington and Scott Kirkpatrick. David, when I left Imperial College in 75, I went to the Institut La Langevin, and David went on a sabbatical to IBM Yorkton Heights, where he collaborated with Scott Kirkpatrick, and they did an Ising version of the calculation. And so I think that paper obviously got a lot of interest because it appeared in PhysRev Letters.
But so were you aware of David's work on that model before he left for IBM? Was he?
Yes. Yeah, well, both of us had sort of worked on it, I get together a bit, but in the end, we didn't really finish it and we didn't really do the numerical work. That was all done at IBM.
Okay. So once you move to ILL, you start working with Peter Young in particular.
Yeah, Peter and I both went to ILL at the same time. That was in 1975, and Peter had been a student of Roger Elliott at Oxford, and he had been working on various magnetic problems, and he'd been working with Robin Stinchcomb as well on normalization group methods. And so Peter and I sort of collaborated on various problems to do with spin glasses. And in the end, we applied the renormalization group technique, real space renormalization technique, to a three-dimensional spin glass.
But so these were, I mean, you were both sort of postdocs. Can you tell us a bit how ILL worked? And
ILL, you're basically what they called a staff scientist. We were in the group with Philippe Nozière's group, had a large group of theorists in what we called the Theory College. Duncan Haldane came a bit later. Bernard Derrida was in that group. Hans Fogelby. Let me think who else. I can't remember everybody. Ted Burkhart was there. So there was a number of us working on various different problems. And so each person was basically independent in some sense. There was no real, it wasn't really a postdoc, but because we didn't see Philippe that often, but we certainly interacted with another group across the way in the CNG with Jacques Villain.
Okay.
It wasn't too far away. There were joint seminars between the two groups.
And at the time you were there, there were, what, a dozen of you or half a dozen?
There's about 10 or 12, yeah, in the group, in the theory group, yeah.
Okay. So you also worked on, can you tell us a bit what led to the genesis of this work? I mean, the two of you just started talking and you realized that you had a common interest in spin glasses, or?
Well, yeah, Peter started applying the real space method to random bonds in spin glasses and doing numerical calculations. And we were discussing it a lot. And it then developed that we thought we could do something analytic with it, with in terms of Gaussian distributions and whatnot. So that just continued until we put that paper together. And then Peter left there and went to IBM for a visitor, I believe, for a year. Before, and then after that, he went to the math department in Imperial College, and then on to Santa Cruz eventually. But we've kept in contact, and we did publish something later on in the 90s. I went there for a visit and I spent a year with him. And
So in what ways were your approaches or your knowledge of spinning glasses complementary in working in this on this problem?
Well, I'm not sure. We were sort of on the same footing almost, but I remember going to, I gave a talk, let's see, it was before going to ILL. I think it was in June or something of 75. I went up and gave a talk at Oxford about a different problem. And then I met with Roger Elliott and Peter Young privately and discussed this approach of Edwards and Anderson and discussed the problem of negative entropy and things like that with them before going to ILL. And so we sort of had met that, just it was only about a, you know, 30 minute talk or so together. And then after that, when I got to ILL, I found that Peter was going as well. So that conversation sort of continued.
Okay, naturally evolved from that. Yeah. One thing that I may have skipped over, but I wanted to know, do you know what Nick Rivier's reaction was to the Edwards Anderson and to the Sherrington Kirkpatrick's ideas? I mean, because he had been working on spinning glasses from a different approach, so I was curious how this.
He never really expressed any opinion, so I don't know for sure.
Neither interest or.
I don't recall anything anyway.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you also worked on percolation with Peter Young.
Effective percolation of spin glass order with Peter and Pierre Futte. Yeah, that was towards about 1978, 79, just before I left ILL.
Yeah, so what led
to... That was a generalization of what we'd done on the spin glass to include defects, you know, non-occupied sites in the problem.
Okay. So you were just mentioning, you left ILL in 79 to take up a faculty position at University of Manitoba. Right. And it, at least from your publication record, it seems that you left the field of spinning glasses at that point.
Yeah, I did. Yeah. I was collaborating with another person at King's College, David Labus. And so we were looking at using renormalization group methods on other problems. So I didn't continue with the spin glass. Also, the replica symmetry breaking came out in 79 as well. And so that was sort of evolving in another direction. And I wasn't involved with that, so I didn't continue.
But did you nevertheless keep abreast of these advances?
Yeah, I was interested in what was going on. I wrote a review article in 87 or so, trying to outline that. It was just a dedication to Alan Morish, who was head of our department and was obviously known in magnetism as well. So.
Okay, so in that review in particular, you thank Bernard Derrida, Cyrino Dominicis, and Peter Modishaw for helpful discussions.
Yeah, I was head of sabbatical at Saclay in 86, 87, roughly. And so we discussed a lot of problems at that time there.
Okay, so that's when you refamiliarized yourself with the advances in RSB.
Right.
At that point. Okay, I see. I better understand now. Despite having, you know, re-immerse yourself in spin glass problems, you didn't really pursue much in this direction afterwards.
No.
Can you give us an idea or a feeling why, or this was not?
Well, I guess I was getting a little more interested in what we call frustrated systems, you know, fully frustrated systems. And I did publish a paper with, let me see, which one was that? Non-universality in two-dimensional frustrated lattices with Chewy and Forgax. That was in, what year was that? 1980. That was soon after getting to Manitoba. And so from there on, I was getting a little more interested in frustrated systems. I was also a little more interested in excitations and magnetic systems and applying rescaling methods to that problem, because there was another colleague at Manitoba, Peter Lawley, who had been working on various excitation problems.
I see.
So it was more a question of who you collaborate easily.
Obviously. So at the University of Manitoba or elsewhere, did you ever teach a class that included notions of spin glass or replica symmetry breaking? And if yes, can you detail?
I never taught replica symmetry breaking, no. It required an advanced course in statistical mechanics, really, and we had a general course. I only gave the advanced course once, and I didn't really get into that problem. I mentioned it. I also mentioned things like the KT transition and things like that, but I didn't really get into the details of replica symmetry breaking, no.
Okay. I mean, we're about to reach the end of our conversation. So is there anything else that you'd like to share with us that we might have overlooked or forgot to explore?
I don't think so. I think that pretty well covers everything that I can remember anyway.
Maybe I can ask, has your work on spin glass has been influential in any of the other research efforts you've undertaken afterwards, or is really a disconnected part in terms of your research program?
The methods, of course. I mean, you apply all these methods. The renormalization group method can be applied to all kinds of problems, whether it's magnetism or even other problems. Mean field theories are always useful. So I'm continuing to collaborate with a group at Dalhousie University now, and it's not in the area of spin glasses or anything, but we're using a lot of these methods still.
So finally, do you happen to have notes, paper, or correspondence from that epoch? And if yes, do you have a plan to deposit them in an academic archive at some point?
I may have some things in my office, but we haven't been on campus because of the pandemic. I think I have an original preprint of the Edwards-Anderson paper somewhere. As far as correspondence go, I don't think I have any real correspondence letters or anything. So that's about all I have.
Because your collaborators were always nearby.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Well, thank you very much for this conversation.
Okay, you're quite welcome. And good luck.
Thank you.